Hi, this is Margaret Scott, the first female writer on Transformers Comics, and you are listening to All Things Transformers.
Hi, this is John Barber from IDW Publishing. You are listening to The Pull Bag.
You've just jumped inside The Pull Bag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic reading crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, IDW, Boom Studios, Zenoscope, and more, we have everything you want to read right here. Transformers comics? Yeah, we cover that. He-Man? Yeah, sure. DC superheroes like Batman, Batgirl, Nightwing, and Batman Beyond? Yep, we have those too. How about TMNT from IDW and I Hate Fairyland from Image Comics? Yeah, we have all that here. Plus, so much more. It's all inside the pullback here on the Geekcast Radio Network. So without any further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we are reading right now here inside the pullback.
Hit record.
Yeah, I did that already.
Good job.
Count in and start going. Woohoo!
My transistors are trembling.
Autobotly August 2018 kicks off with something that has been years in the making. The return of the Fembots to all things Transformers here inside the Pullbag. This is episode 317 of the Pullbag. I am your host, TFG and Mike. Joining me are three Fembots that would give Austin Powers a run for his money. First up, we have the Cyclonus loving, knockout drooling, Nicole Beatles Diva Hailstorm. Hello.
Rock on.
See? No mention of Rio this time.
I appreciate that. Oh, you just bitched his day. What are you talking about?
Then we have the Megatron-obsessed, wrong Prime-worshipping Heather, a.k.a. Hahi Prime. Rodimus there rules, is... Optimus rules.
You're allowed to have that opinion. It is wrong.
No, it's not. Then there's that Wrecker girl. She wrecks, she rules. It's Amy, a.k.a. Lady Wreck.
Woohoo! Not the kicking intro that I expected, but that's okay.
Yeah, you interrupt me enough times. You're not worthy enough.
Yeah, I get
of
it.
One.
Yeah, it's uh-huh. Fine. It's fine. I'll whirl it on you later.
Uh-huh. I'm sure you will. Today we explore Sorry. The Distant Stars with Transformers Windblade. This is the second series that was a part of the Combiner Wars, so this shit is confusing. Amy,
so
take
confusing.
This away, because holy crap. Okay, so before you go, just a little bit of history, folks. We're only currently doing, in this episode, issues 4-7 of the second Windblade series, written by Margaret Scott, art by Corin Howell. We're also doing Combiner Hunters at the end, so the art in that is done by Sarah Peter Dorche. The crazy thing about this is we tried doing this, like, 3.5 years ago, when this was, like, new, we tried doing the Combiner Wars issues for Windblade. We did 4 of the 7 issues, and only 4 of them were actual Combiner Wars crossovers. But how this second volume of Windblade is traded is crazy. There's actually 2 trade paperbacks. There's one called Distant Stars, which is what I will be going off of, because it's just... issues 4-7 plus Combiner Hunters, and then they released something more recently called Transformers Windblade Lost City. I'm so lost.
Yeah. So how was traded this set that were... So the first volume that they did, the one that was drawn and all the art done by Sarah Stone and Margaret wrote... Mm-hmm. That one was just Windblade Volume 1, and it had 4 issues, and
right.
We've already reviewed it.
We've already covered that, yes.
You were thinking, if you were thinking, oh, then I'll just get Windblade Volume 2. Well, Volume 2 kind of got split up in between 2 things because it got folded into Combiner Wars.
Yep.
So half of it, if you just wanted just the trade with just the Windblade, however it fits into continuity, you're going to want to go with Transformer Combiner Wars, mm-hmm. and then get Transformers Windblade Distant Stars. That'll be the first 4 issues and the last 4 issues with Combiner Hunters, the one shot.
Right.
And that's what I got.
Yeah.
But then they came out with Last City.
Yeah.
Now the Last City is basically all of the Windblade issues. We get all of the first volume, which was the 1-4 with Sarah Stone doing just the solid art on that, where mm-hmm. we first get introduced to Windblade. And then all of volume 2, which is Half of Combiner, yeah, it's the seven issues minus the three Combiner Wars issues and the Combiner Hunters one-shot. The problem with that is that there are really essential pieces to what happens in the second arc, the volume two, that get folded into Combiner Wars. So the confusion is that when you read The Last City, you're going to have missing pieces to how things pay off in that, because combiners happen and then they suddenly just appear and you're like, what? Wait. When did we get that? So you have to to get the full story, you have to get Combiner Wars. There's just no way around it. And The Last City is the one volume that kind of misses that. So I think the reason why they made it was because people were out there going, hey, I want to complete just Windblade series thing, whatever. And right. So that's probably why they put it together like that. I really don't know, other than the fact that it's very confusing. And here's the thing, because I stopped reading for a little while, then I jumped back in it. I was like going, wait, what issues are these? I'm missing pieces. So as I was reading to get ready for this podcast, I was like, what am I missing?
and what she was missing at the time when she was asking me about this, because we had a whole conversation about this off air, the fact, as she said, Combiner Wars, you need to read part of that to finish off this story, because the Windblade epilogue is Robots in Disguise 42.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the other one. Yeah, the other one that if you've read Combiner Wars, then you hop out of Combiner Wars and read the next issue, which is the epilogue of Combiner Wars. Also not traded in any of these as well.
No.
So if you got like, hey, what was this scene going on between Optimus Prime and Prime, or Optimus Prime and Prowl in that Windblade issue that happens, blah blah blah. Yeah, you don't see the payoff for that till the epilogue, and that also is not traded in The Last City, even though it's in that
Combiner
trade.
Wars for yeah.
It's versus Combiner Wars, the Combiner Wars trade, and right. Then The Last City. I mean, if you got Combiner Wars and then Last City and you failed to get Distant Stars, then you're going to be a little confused. So that's the lowdown.
I hope to God when they eventually put this in the phase 2, or if it ends up being phase 3, the actual reading order hardcovers that they come out with, I hope to God they fix this.
The collection volume will make sense.
I hope to God.
I love those collection volumes. They're worth the money.
Yeah, they are definitely worth it. But like, if you decide to get the collection volume, my guess is that they will put it in the proper order and it'll all work out.
Because somebody done screwed up with this.
Yeah, because this was a little bit confusing. If I remember correctly, when it first got announced, I thought, okay, that's interesting. Well, does it have the Combiner War issues? And I don't remember if I ever figured out whether or not it was going to have it or not. I didn't get The Last City. I thought it was kind of pointless. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it. Although I did like the cover. I thought the cover was really pretty.
The cover was cool, but there's no way in hell I was getting that.
Yeah, so if anybody else out there is like, hey, how do I follow what you're saying? It's like, just get Distant Stars.
Exactly.
It's called Transformers Windblade, Distant Stars, and that's issue 4 through 7 and the Combiner Hunters one shot.
Yep.
The Last City will not have Combiner Hunters one shot. That's the other thing that's important, because it kind of follows around that time as well, and it kind of is important because that affects other things later. We'll discuss it.
Yeah.
But still. So if you wanted to get the whole thing, let's say you're noob and you're like, hey, I want to hear it all. Get Transformers Windblade Volume 1, then get Transformers Combiner Wars. That'll be the 1 through 3 arc with the extra rid issues. Then get Transformers Windblade Distant Stars, and then you're all set. And anything after that, you'll go on to I think Robots in Disguise or. The John Barber run of Transformers
It was Transformers
it
and
Prime.
Yeah, and it was Transformers and now it's Optimus Prime. Yeah. I gotta say, before we go any further, Ryan, aka Nightbeat, and I are gonna cover Optimus Prime and Lost Light Volume 1 later this month. But reading that Like, I'm in the middle of reading Optimus Prime right now so we can record that episode. And I feel so disjointed reading the first volume of Optimus Prime because it's been a year since I read the end of the Transformers Not Rid series that this used to be. That used to be. And I'm like, I feel so lost.
Yeah.
I kind of have a little bit of that too.
I hear you, Mike. It has been I ducked out of Optimus Prime for a while because I couldn't care anymore, and I'm ticked off at IDW Prime. But I finally dived back in since everything was ending, and I wanted to find out how it was ending. If you read it in big, huge chunks,
yeah,
it's a lot easier to deal with. But issue by issue, it's really hard.
I have the volumes. I have the trades digitally. I was not buying the single. I was not buying it single issue at all. I waited for the trades on Optimus Prime and Lost Light. So I've got the collections for it digitally. But just like I'm like two or three issues into it, and I'm like, okay. Anyway. So
I just to piggyback on that as well, because I've not been keeping up on either, but I've been trying to catch up on Optimus Prime, and I think I'm on issue 13. Mm-hmm. I got to the end of that and went, there's so much I'm missing. I need to go back and reread all of this all over again, going, I'm missing pieces. And that's the other thing. I guess that's the only criticism I can throw at it, is that when they made it this huge combined universe, I'm starting to get to the point where I realize, oh crap, I do need to go back and read the G.I. Joe stuff. I do need to go back and read all of the ROM stuff. I do need to go pick up all of these extra stuff, because things are happening in those issues that are coming in this direction. And I'm like going, wait, where was that at? And I'm kind of frustrated with it, because I didn't want to have to read Visionaries. I didn't want to have to read some of them, because I thought, well, I just don't feel like reading that. I only care about Transformers and the Cybertron story that was going on. Right. I really don't. I read the Costa stuff. I don't want to go back to Earth, to be honest. Costa stuff. No slight to John, because I like what he's building too, but it's like I never really wanted to go back. I wanted to see Spike get squished, and he didn't. So I'm like,
I think the majority of people wanted to see that.
Yeah. Wow. Can you imagine the joy and rejoicing? Sorry, I'm just gonna take a moment and meditate on Spike getting squished.
We're all just visioning that, like, oh yes.
Wow. That'd be a good day. Okay, so
you know, that's what they shouldn't have ended with the Unicron. They should have ended with that.
Unicron's whole point is to squish Spike.
And he's like, never mind, assist Unicron.
He's like, that's why you need to destroy Earth, just to get to that one guy.
It'd be like
is kind of like a cockroach. He'd probably survive.
You guys like the cover of the huge Wreckers compendium, where there's just like the big pile of bots, but it's a big pile of people all shoving Spike up towards Unicron's mouth.
And they strangely look like fans.
Yeah, all of us are like sneaked in there. Weren't you you were sneaked into some issue.
I was back in that ongoing, the Costas run.
That day.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the joy. That was few moments of joy that I had for Costas.
You're like,
and sadly, I was picketing. The people that were in there that were us were picketing against the Transformers being on Earth.
Oh yeah, no. I remember that was fun.
Nothing's changed.
The more they change, the more they stay the same.
Let's discuss this comic book so poor Nicole can get to work on time.
Yeah, I know.
Windblade isn't too bad. I like Windblade.
Yes, Windblade's adorable.
So in issue 4, Windblade and Starscream are essentially an old married couple.
Sure words have not been spoken.
Mm-hmm. Knockout is hilarious.
Knockout is adorable. I love Knockout.
Mm-hmm. The best line in this entire issue is "Shut up, rat trap," with both of them finally getting on the same page and, you know, agreeing on something. Let's see, what else did I write down for this? Velocitron has too much Energon? Really? You'd think the Decepticons would go there instead of ravaging Cybertron.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knew it was. Nobody knew where it was.
Obviously, yeah. What else did you guys think of this one, Heather?
I liked the.
Oh. It's all good. Okay. Well. Okay. I kind of want to do a quick overview of the entire series.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which is just. What do we think of Kornhowl's art?
And I love it. I think it's
the
fun.
The general kind of this, because this series is about finding the different colonies and roping them into the Council of Worlds. So I would be like, thoughts and feelings on that whole thing, and rather than just like starting with diving into individual issues, I think it's useful to just be like, what do we think of this trade, this volume?
I think it's good. I think it's interesting. I think it somewhat slightly suffers from the Combiner Wars thing, but other than that, I mean, if you start at issue, you know, 4 instead of issues 1 to 3, you're fine, because it basically, like you said, starts on the hunt for the colonies, and with Corrin's art, it's very, very cartoonish, which is good, because it reminds me, like, it's basically her version of the G1 cartoon with all of these other characters that she can then put her spin on, like the Beast Wars characters when we get to Yukaris and all that. Knockout looks just like he would in the Prime cartoon, so that's cool.
I had an interesting experience going for, because when we were first figuring out how we were going to run this podcast, we were thinking we were going to do the Combiner Wars issues. Mm-hmm. And so going from the way Livio draws Cybertron, which is a place I do not wish to go, ever, and then switching over to Kornhowl's art and Thomas Deere's colors was kind of a whiplash, but also so much more welcoming. And so this art for this story of, hey, let's get everybody in this Council of Worlds, making Cybertron a place you might actually want to come to, is helpful. Because if it was still that Combiner Wars Livio art, everybody'd be like, nope, I'm out. And I wouldn't blame them. But when I first... this read-through was the first time when I felt not quite as off-put by this art style. It's so cartoony that I have a hard time taking it seriously.
Okay.
And I'm used to reading these comics in adult mode. And this particular trade is a lot more, feels a lot more like I would pass this to my 11-year-old daughter and be like, here, check this out. You know, read My Little Pony and then read this.
I agree. At least until you get to issue 7. Seven feels like it ups its game a little bit, because there's more manipulation going on between the characters and how they wrote it.
It does improve as you kind of adjust to the world. And honestly, the issue with the big party, that's just phenomenal. And I love everything about it. And it is joy and sauce and winning. So once I kind of found my footing in the way that Corrin was making the world, I was like, oh, okay, I know where I am now. But it was such a switch. Even from Sarah Stone's art, like if you just skip Combiner Wars and go from Windblade Volume 1 to Windblade Volume 2, it still feels very, very different. But I will say, because you know me and colors, I will say I think this is Thomas Deere's best fit for coloring in anything he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Because somehow, due to his palette, this makes it feel like a planet in space.
Yeah.
And I don't know any better way of saying that, but like something about the lighting, I feel like at all times it is dark outside and there are stars.
Right.
Even
you could almost feel like the ozone kind of like almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got this kind of really, it's got a specificity to it that I appreciate. So yeah, I think once I adjusted, I think they're a good art team. It's just so different.
Yeah, at first I'm not used to the art style because I was like, I'm like, wow, this is really, really cartoonish, like you said. But you know what? I think after the first, you know, probably 7 or 8 pages, I got past it because I realized, I don't know, I just got sucked into the storyline. And so somehow it worked.
That's cool. See, I had actually a hard time with the storyline too, because these were such one shots.
Yeah.
And yes, there was political machinations, but it feels a lot more day trippy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that also took me a while to get my head around. But can we talk a little bit of spoilers?
Oh, yeah,
for stuff that's happening right now?
It's been out for a while. Old. Like what?
Well, like, no spoilers for issues that have come out recently, like in the last month or so.
Yeah, sure, that's fine. Anything that's because more than a week old is fine. The one thing I want to point out about Corin's art on this, on Windblade specifically, is at the time, the first issue, even though Combiner Wars issue was not her, but, okay, let's say issue 4. So basically, Combiner Wars Windblade started in March of 2015. By the time we get to issue 4, where this picks up and she's on art, that was June 24th of 2015. At the exact same time, around there, I think June 3rd or so, she was doing a 6-issue series over at DC as well, Batmite, with writer Dan Jurgens. So oh, yeah. I had read that before I had read this. So I was already accustomed to her art style. So when I saw her basically drawing, like I said, the scene with Starscream, Windblade, and Rattrap, where they're telling him to shut up, I'm like, oh my god. It's G1 Starscream with a G1 version of Windblade talking to Beast Wars Rattrap. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. But go ahead.
Can I
jump in real quick? Yeah, and
no, go for it.
Way you can move on and we can go to the next topic after this. So I see what you're saying, because there are parts in here where I think she gets her feet, but like there are parts and pieces where like hands don't feel like they fit, because there's a, like you said, it's a little bit of a cartoony, like you said. And while I really, really like a lot of the expressions, there are parts and pieces where sometimes even hands don't look like they're attached.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, just had a feeling of that. She gets her feet by the end. And I really don't remember if she'd done a Transformers book before this. I think she did. I think we saw her in an annual, I want to say, but I'd need to go look it up real quick. And I didn't prep really well for the art like I should have, but you're right. I mean, a lot of the points and that's just the only thing I put on here. But other than that, like, yes, if you go from Livio's art to this, it's a huge switch. But in terms of what they do in the writing, I liked how they moved from Livio's darker, moodier style to this, mm-hmm. because the stories are not really heavy. Things happen that make it like interesting. I mean, like Margaret packs it. She packs it as best as she can without getting too much in there and making it feel like, oh, there's so much going on. It's like, no, they have specific goals and you pay it off. And it gets paid off before the end. You get those goals met by then. So, like, in terms of writing, I think she did great with that. And we'll probably get more into that later. But, like, it worked for what the art needed to do. It pulled it off. And so, I was like you. By the time I got halfway into it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is the art. Oh, yeah, that's right. This is not the art that we had before that. And I think that's also a criticism that I think a lot of fans have thrown at a lot of these events, is that sometimes when you get these events and you don't have the same artist on every issue that goes through the event, it detracts from your enjoyment of it, because you're switching from one mood to the next. And sometimes that switch is incredibly huge.
Yeah. So cool. Anyway, what I wanted to bring up in terms of story was how much my perception changes of some of the things that happen in this due to the recent stuff with Unicron and the Optimus Prime series. Especially, I remember when they go to Eucharis and there's the Bird Titan Chella. And I, at the time, was like, this seems so just random. Why is there this Bird Titan that is against regular Transformers? And then we've just found out that Shockwave went and lived there with his fursuit Onyx Prime outfit on and made them be against, you know, people who turn into cars so that he could have his own kind of group. And, you know, somebody on the internet correct me if I've got this wrong, because I'm still trying to figure it all out. But so there's that. And then the fact that Unicron has eaten all these guys by now. Like, all these guys are dead. Velocitron is dead. Eucharis is dead. And it's so different going back and reading this now. There's this weird sense of nostalgia. I'm like, oh, they're dead.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody replaced Heather with Shattered Glass Optimus. That's what they've done now at this point.
You get that. You get this when reading, at least, because that's all the only volume I've read so far is Unicron, the zero issue, the comic book free, the free comic book issue that came out this last May of 2018. You read that, and that's where you get the, oh, crap. Everybody's been gulped and eaten and
yeah,
that's it. I was like, well, that sucks.
Yeah. it made Unicron weirdly real going through and reading this, because that those issues are so packed and huge and wild and crazy, but all of a sudden just taking a moment to be a little quieter and being like, here, meet these people, and meanwhile I'm like, oh, they're dead.
And that's why that reviewer it made no sense what he said, because I'm like, yeah, if you've been reading and you find that certain big bad, you know, Unicron has eaten people, that makes him a incredible huge that makes him like the ultimate villain. He just gulped places and they didn't catch it until now.
And if anyone goes back and listens to Nicole and I on that episode of All Things Transformers, I did contact the guy, and I did. I wasn't mean or anything like that. I just said, "Have you been reading for the last 12 years, or is this something you're just jumping onto?"
Even for the last year.
Yeah, or even
for the last year. Or pre-read anything, you know. Yeah.
And he basically said, "No, I love the original, you know, franchise. I love the franchise in general. I, you know, wanted to see what Unicron was going to do since he's coming in, and he just felt that it was a lackluster issue," and that's fine. That's his opinion.
It's understandable, I guess, if you haven't read anything else, you don't feel the impact of what's going on.
Yeah.
And not that I'm going to try to review Unicron right now, because that's
down the road. Way later.
Yeah. But it's just, again, like some, and maybe this is a criticism as well, because now I feel like, and I've mentioned this before, that I have to read everything else coming into getting ready to read Unicron and see the end of everything.
It's the whole purpose why I'm currently reading Optimus Prime and Lost Light right now, because within this month of Transformers comics here inside the pullback on All Things Transformers, Ryan and I are doing both volumes one of each, Optimus Prime and Lost Light, and volumes two of each. So we're not going to get to Unicron until next year. We're just not.
Yeah.
Am I going to read it to find out what the heck happens? Oh, yeah, I am. But it's not going to be covered here on the podcast until
next year. Sometime.
Because
much to do. Yeah, there's too much to review.
It's just way too much.
It is what it is. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, I think
we want to drag this one down, because this was really a fun read, to be honest.
It is fun. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I will say, just to close off, I find every time I read any sort of story that goes over multiple issues, the first issue feels a little iffy. And then when you read the whole thing over again, you're like, oh, I get it, and it's cool. So we just have to give ourselves time to kind of bed our roots down into the story, and then we kind of...
That's the challenge of being a reviewer, though, is the fact that
you have to be right then.
You have to review such a small portion of a whole, a bigger whole, and sometimes mm-hmm. you can't really do that till you have the whole whole.
Yeah. Everybody just does their best. Yay, the internet.
Yep. Very much so.
Just the fact that we do live in a society now where people just demand instant thoughts, and we can't even have completely formed thoughts, so we just kind of go, the thought. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
It's kind of like, oh shit, what are we going to do now?
Okay.
Oh my god, the internet is Unicron. We're being sucked into it!
Talk about The Walking Dead.
Oh god, please no.
Well, what the reference I'm talking about. It's not the zombies who are The Walking Dead, it's survivors.
Yeah. Of course. Okay. Nicole, you've been awfully silent over there.
Oh, I'm just listening.
Yeah, I know you are.
What do you want me to say? I don't know what else to say.
Whatever you want to say. I don't know. When you were reading through this, because we've all been kind of keeping up with with how the universe is going to end later this year. When you were reading through this, did you have the same feelings that Heather had? Like, oh, they're dead now.
I didn't even put that together until just now. That's what was really weird. I'm like, oh yeah, that is kind of true, isn't it?
The first time I read through it, I didn't like. I read through it like the first time a while ago. Then when you told us, hey, we're reading this, we're reviewing this month, I read it right after I'd read the Unicron issue, so I did kind of have that cognizant in my brain. But then I kind of flipped through it again just today before we started the pod. Well, you know, earlier today. Because I knew I was going to be getting on the podcast. I wanted it fresh in my head. And I didn't even think about it because I tried to focus specifically on what's just happening in the story and what do I bring out. I was like, it is easy to think about. Let's just be present in what's going on right here. But, you know, if you just read Unicron and Kron and then you come back to read this, you're going to be like, but everything's dead.
It's like I said at the end of the last episode of All Things Transformers that Nicole and I did, you know. The way this universe ends, the only thing that's left to say is, till all are gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they would be one in somebody's stomach.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
That is such... Oh, you know, Blinking Jim would write something like that. Blinking Well would.
So you're saying the well of all sparks is inside Unicron's stomach?
James to Blinking Pete, man. Sorry, I'm now swearing incoherently.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Issue 6 is my favorite out of this because it's been a long time since I've seen Beast. I mean, I know there are other Beast Wars comics and things, but like, Corin did an amazing job with the Beast characters. I felt like I saw and heard young season 1 Beast Wars Cheetor in this comic. I heard Ian James Corlett's voice in my head as I'm reading the stuff. Same thing with Dinobot with Scott McNeil's voice and things like that.
Agreed.
They did a good job. It really did capture it. Go ahead, Nicole. Yeah.
I think we just need more party scenes.
Oh, yeah. See, that's my personal favorite is the party one. I love that one. But yeah, isn't Margaret, like, didn't she grow up on Beast Wars?
Yeah.
That's her that's her G1. And so you can really tell, like she just brought all of her love of Beast Wars to that issue. And that anytime you get somebody writing who's bringing all their love, it's it gives you the warm fuzzies to read it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's that guy. I know that guy.
But this series was, even with the Combiner Wars stuff and having to follow it in that, this series was like, if this had been able to stand alone away from Combiner Wars, it would have been even better than what it already is. But this series still explores so many facets of all of these characters. Margaret's writing, like, there was one note I had, I think, in issue 5 about how she, I don't want to say colludes, but she brings characters together in a way where in the writing it makes so much sense that they would do something together than they would go off on their own and do something stupid.
What? Give an example. What do you mean specifically?
Like when she and Rat Trap start talking to each other, and Rat Trap, we find out, yeah.
Yeah.
And Rat Trap, you know, and Rat Trap's pretty much like, well, I'm just out to cover my own ass because I'm Rat Trap, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really, like, he assists her in going through the space bridge. And, you know, he knows Starscream's going to kick his ass, but...
Yeah, he's got his own motivation.
He'd rather have his ass be there to be able to be kicked than not have his ass be there to be kicked.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite interesting because up until this series, we're not quite sure who Rat Trap is with. At first, we think he's with Starscream. But in this one, you definitely get this feeling that he's working on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely is working on his own, but he's also working against Starscream, which is kind of a good thing because when you see he goes, I think it's in issue 6, when he goes to Yakaris by himself.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And then he comes back, gives her a tip, lean on, you know, the spider and the spotted one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's the little things like that. And you're like, it's what makes me really like Rat Trap because he's a wild card. You don't know where his loyalties really lie. And they really kind of just, and this is the character, this is very true of the character that we got in Beast Wars. It kind of just is his own self. He's got his own motivations and sometimes they line up with everybody and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm actually glad you guys brought that up because I hadn't really put it together. But the way John Barber writes Rat Trap, I never really quite grokked him as a character. But then as soon as Marigrid got him and through this trade series of issues, we really start to be like, oh, yeah, that's who Rat Trap is. And it makes all of the other stuff that he does really coalesce into a character that we're like, yep, we get it. Because he's working, he's kind of being Prowl's sort of man on the inside. He feels like the guy who's saying he'll work with anybody just to try and stay alive, like you were saying. And yeah, I think this really serves his character well, this series of issues that we're reviewing.
And even the stuff that we got previously with him, it's kind of like he was getting to know how things function. Like, I haven't been on Cybertron for a while, so let's see how the political atmosphere is. Let's see how people... And he just kind of observes and does what he's supposed to do until he gets to a point where he's got all the pieces that he needs, and now he starts playing his own game. And that's where I kind of feel like that this... He started playing his own game. I think he's been in here as long as far back as Dark Cybertron.
Yeah, he's been...
Yeah, so he's been here for a while. It's like he's been staking out everything and finding how things work and function, and now he's becoming a playing piece, basically, in the chess game. And I love that about his character.
Yeah, so, yeah, you're right. This is really good Rat Trap development. So, yay, Rat Trap.
He's always been a complex character.
Mm-hmm. He's a good character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This story was just so good, and how they wrap this up. I was wondering why the hell, when this first came out, I'm like, why the hell is Alita on the throne?
I'm like, oh, no. This is why I love issue 7.
And then I looked at the picture more, and I'm like, ugh. Starscream and Windblade's heads on a pike. Ugh, no.
The thing that I was surprised is with Alita is how big she was, because she's bigger than Starscream, and I was just like, this girl's massive. But can I give a shout out to my girl Stryka? Come on.
Oh, heck yeah.
I was so, so happy to see the Stryka love, because
Stryka's the bomb.
I love that woman. God, I love it.
What is she? She's got like some good lines. I'm trying to like not be loud.
I do not attack. I terminate.
Yeah,
because that was her line in Beast Machines, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
See, Beast Machines is such a forgotten series. I wish people would love that series more. Not you. I'm not talking about you specifically. I'm just saying, in general, like, you know, you ask somebody, what's your least favorite Transformers series? They're either going to say the Unicron trilogy or Beast Machines. And I'm like, why don't you like Beast Machines? Come on.
It was too touchy-feely.
Oh, shut up.
No, Beast Machines had Jetstorm. Come on, it's worth it.
Exactly.
I think it Beast Machines is the Livio Ramondelli of Transformers.
It is. It very much is.
It's like, you either love it or you hate it.
Mm. I liked the music.
Oh, the music is amazing. The sauce. Yeah, the music is the sauce.
So this is the reason why I liked issue 7, is because it's so dark and gritty, and there are pieces to it that you're like, what did she just... Oh my gosh, everything there is made out of pieces of people.
That's another thing that becomes more meaningful as you go along and read stuff that follows. Their whole, like, no, if you lie, it's punishable by death. We do not put up with lying. And you're like, whoa, these guys are intense. And then you realize that the reason they have that rule much later, you realize, is because they were manipulated by Leech Maximo. And they're like, nope, we are not going to listen to Loki anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just, I love the way all of these characters and stories have continued to be developed. It's just good groundwork. Yay, Margrid.
Margrid just amazes me. She does such good character development. And yeah. You know, just when I think, I'm like, okay, I think, because when we watched, you know, Windblade in different forms here and there, you know, she's been on the various TV series and stuff. And for some reason, I always go back to how Margrid always writes her, you know, because she's been on Robots in Disguise and... not a huge fan of that character. Windblade is just like, okay, is however you want her to be, basically. But this is the character I like. You know, she's doing good for the being good for the right reason, you know.
Yeah.
And that's true, because in such a short time, we've gotten almost three different iterations of her. We've gotten what IDW and Margrid have built, what Robots in Disguise has built, and then what the Combiner, whatever, the Machima...
The Prime Wars trilogy
is built.
I just finished that, and I am now convinced that after all these years, 30 years or more, Megatron's not a bad guy. He's just a misunderstood good guy.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I admit that I did not... That was my least favorite version of Windblade, was what they did there. And I'm glad that I'm not... watching that. I watched the first one and it was enough, and I said, nope, no more for me.
Okay, but listen to me right now. You need to finish it. You really do.
Just because, for the Megatron?
Well, not necessarily Megatron, but just for the whole story. For the other fact, okay, so I forget off the top of my head it's not Frank Welker, it's somebody else that voices Megatron. Yeah.
But it's really good. I've heard good things about the Megatron.
The fact that you have Luke flipping Skywalker as Megatronus. And yeah, you need to watch it just for that.
Alone. I heard that the final series was pretty...
Power of the Primes is the final series. You don't necessarily have to watch Titans Return, the second series, but you should. Only because, you know...
You Hot get Rod's to know the voice and stuff.
All that. Yeah, you get to know that and... Shut up. hey, he gets his shattered glass.
I like
her.
Well,
kind of, sorta. He gets the Matrix of Chaos basically put inside him, and he becomes Shattered Glass Rada. He becomes Rodimus Kron in the cartoon, but it's the Shattered Glass coloring. It's the black and purple. So
he wasn't that. You know, the Lost Light version of that is not a Shattered Glass version of him.
Oh, just no, saying. No. I know it's not. It's just a repaint. I understand that. Yeah. But I'm saying in Prime Wars, he turns evil because he has basically the essence of Unicron inside of him.
Okay.
Nobody deserves that. Not even Roddy.
Yeah. Not even Roddy. Come on. All right. Well, I'll think about it. You haven't changed my mind completely. But just for the voice acting alone, I think I'll think about it. It's just that it was so off-putting seeing Windblade act the way that she was. And I just was so, I was not a fan. I'm sorry. These are characters that have been built up in other iterations of the brand, and they've been done better. And when you have so much better to compare it to, that's why I didn't watch it, because of that. What IBW is building is good enough for me at this point. But still, I mean, so coming back to the comic, what did you guys think? Because we get how many different worlds in these four issues? Let's see.
We don't Icarus, ever get to see the Devizen place.
Yeah, we didn't. It's just a panel.
Icarus, Velocitron, and
the ship of Alita's people, and
Carcer.
Four different places.
Yeah, four.
With four different, like, you know, things set up differently, and we haven't really talked on how the variety of that. So that was one of the things I put in my notes. I was like, hey, we should talk about, like, the differences between the different, not everybody seems like they've gotten that they've done well since they all split from Cybertron, even though Cybertron did the worst. It almost feels like Cybertron isn't as worse off as some of these other places.
Yeah, I don't know.
They all have bad things that happen to them because they all split off.
and part of my thing is, like, when is someone, Margaret or whomever, which they're not going to do that now, because hello, till all are gone, Unicron's here and we're dead. But when is someone going to go back and give us, like, a 3 or 4 issue miniseries spotlighting the actual planets? And, like, that's what I wanted. After issue 6 and reading all about Icarus, I'm like, oh, I want to know more about this planet. I want to know more about this history.
Well, it sounds like there is more about Icarus that we learn later with Shockwave and stuff. So there's that.
Yeah.
It does still, I think maybe that's why, going back to my sense that this book just felt light, so many of these worlds can continue to feel like untapped potential, like never fully fleshed out in ways that you really, really want them to. And Mike, your idea of having spotlights would be so awesome, because we're introduced to these characters who seem like they'd be really fun to really dig into, and then we just never get. There's a little bit done in Optimus Prime with the little binary people from that Devizen place, but not a lot. And it'd be interesting to, you know, find out more about them. Obviously, we would all go and hang out with the Beast Wars people forever because they're fun.
Even though Chella is crazy.
Yeah. Oh man, and guys, we got to talk about Titans. I have opinions.
Yeah.
Sorry. But like,
go ahead.
But yeah, like, who else am I forgetting? You know, untapped potential. I think that's it. My train of thought just went yearing off the cliff.
No, it's good though, because I kind of got the sense of other fiction kind of inspired some of this stuff. Like, you know. You go to Velocitron, and it's pretty much an ice world that's running away from the sun all the time.
Which is cool! That's such a cool sci-fi concept!
I love that, especially for Velocitron, where they're always racing.
Yeah.
They're literally, their whole life is racing against not being burned by the sun. And I thought, wow, that's unique. I like that.
That was very cool. It was even cooler when Windblade actually took a hold of the city to win.
The art kind of got in the way for me. But yeah, okay, really fast. The page where you first see the city and they're like, oh, crud. You see the giant city rolling towards you and the fire in the background. Yeah. That's the one where I most desperately wanted another artist on that page. Because can you imagine Alex Milne?
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
The weight of this city was not big enough to pull it off.
It wasn't big enough.
Didn't feel
and
it
even just the background, the way the background is done and the way the colors are done, it doesn't quite feel like, I was like, is it just a really bright sunrise? There's not that sense of, oh crud, we are all going to die.
There's multiple cities that are like this, so it's like it has to be. I wanted the size to be double that, or you need to take the shadows of the characters and put them down to itty bitty little specks, so that you can get the weight of how huge this place is. It's got to be twice that size.
Yeah, Have you guys seen, there's this a episode? Preview for a movie coming out called Mortal Engines?
Immortal Engines, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Something like that, yeah. Where I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would have been cool. Okay, so really fast, Titans, especially the one that is the city on Velocitron. You guys are missing all of my hand gestures right now, but they're getting
Navitus?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's his name. The thing that continues to bug me, especially as I go back and read this, is just how sad the Titans make me.
Yes.
Yeah. And especially this one.
Oh, yeah.
Where he feels like an abused and neglected child.
Oh, it's more than that. He's like, he's barely holding on to consciousness. He just halfway through the conversation, it's like he forgets what they were talking about and says, oh, who are you again? And it was like, oh my gosh.
The fact that he is.
And they did that in a page. Mildred did that within a page.
Yeah. That's the thing that Mildred does, is Mildred makes the Titans people.
Yeah.
Even Mildred makes the Titans people.
Yeah. Mildred makes the Titans people that you want a plushie of that you can hug.
No.
It's very true.
That's funny.
You're right. I mean, because like within a page, within two pages, you're like, so when we get to the end and you don't see Windblade put them all back together and fix them, you're like, but I needed that.
Yeah.
You know,
I needed that. Like, Mike, please put Ratchet, like a little soundbite of Ratchet in right there.
I needed that. But yes, I needed that by the end of this issue, and then we don't get it. And I was like, but what about Navitus? What about him? Is he going to get fixed? So somebody has to come back and fix this guy, even if he's going to get eaten.
That falls into the stories that you want to see and never quite get to see. And maybe that's why we love this version of Windblade so much, because right now the world is so gray.
See, and this is another thing about Maygrid's writing. You feel for this character, even though you don't see a face with it. You see this, like, the orb. My gosh.
Oh, yeah, his brain, yeah.
Yeah, there's the brain capacity, and you're just like, you feel for this just structure. You're just like, oh, my gosh, this is the being right here. And you're not seeing the face or the emotions that are coming out of it. That's how good the writing.
You just see this little dialogue. Yeah. This little dialogue thing down going round and round and round and round and round.
Yeah.
You get the buzz of that, and I thought that was brilliant how just with a word, writing it over and over and over again like they did, you got an instant idea of exactly what's going on.
Yeah,
I know. It's, I mean, to be able to make an emotion, or makes you feel for just the sphere of metal, you're just like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's good writing right there.
Yeah,
very good writing.
Yeah, but what I was going to say about what makes Windblade stand out so much in the IDW universe is that we see her over and over trying to help, genuinely caring about people,
and this is why I love her.
We get that so rarely from anyone. I mean, I would say, I mean, James does his schmoopy people, but John Barber is a lot less about, here's a person trying to be kind. He's a lot more about
plot driven.
Here's everybody trying to get things done.
Yeah.
What he doesn't realize is you have to be cruel to be kind.
Well, see, Margaret shows that. She shows Windblade having to make compromises, and we feel her being lessened by them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's a very empathetic. There we go.
Character. Empathic? Who cares?
Empathic,
yes. Whatever.
I think that's true. Yes, I love it.
This is her character, too, because, I mean, not only is she's the only one that can speak, she's one of the few city speakers that can speak to Titans. And so she's more empathetic than any other character, I think, in the whole series, to be honest, that I've seen, besides Rung.
Bless Rung. And even Rung's not always super great at it.
Sometimes he's...
He tries.
He's Rung. Yeah, he tries.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right. I mean, Windblade is that, and maybe that's the reason why she's such a standout character, is because Margaret has gotten in her and created this so well that I don't want anything else. I want that because in all of the characters that we have, she's probably the most empathetic. And you're right. Everything that she does takes a piece of her. Everything that she does, like every plot, every conflict that we see from here until Margaret jumps off, is taking a piece of her. It's taking a piece every single time. And it's slowly happening every single time you see it, you're like, but then she's stuck between a rock and a hard place. You're like, it'll be interesting because the next stuff that's coming with Till All Are One is going to be interesting.
Gosh. I really want to talk about it with you guys so bad.
Not until next week.
Next week, yeah.
Hold your horses. That's next week.
I'm holding them. I'm holding them just barely. They're fighting me. They're wearing on, guys. I'm hauling on the reins.
So one of the, well, I think it's also cool to not just talk about Navitus, but we've got Chella and we've also got Carcerere. Carcerere.
Oh man. Oh, I'm keeping my mouth shut. It's really hard. I'm like swerve, like our urge to speak 98, 99, fist in mouth.
Yeah, I would strongly advise anybody that's going to listen to our review of Till All Are One, Volume 1 and Volume 2, read it before you listen to the podcast.
Oh, gosh, oh, yeah. Please do it. Just read it. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Like it. Yeah. Not that I want to stop and say, hey, let's plug another podcast.
The crazy thing is I did not know, because like all of us, I've been keeping up, but I haven't been keeping up. I just now realized Till All Are One has 3 trade volumes. I did not realize that at first. I thought it was just going to be 2, because I thought it was only a 12-issue series.
Wasn't it only 2?
No, it's 3. It's 3. There's a third one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 3. Because there were 12 issues.
Yeah, there was more,
apparently. The first part feels a little disjointed, because it was still being roped into other events.
Gotcha. Mm.
So... anyway, now I'm second guessing myself, but yeah, I feel like the first volume was a little bit of cleanup after whatever the heck it was. Was it Titans?
Some minor.
I don't care.
Titans Return. Titans Return. I think. Yeah.
There's some weird thing that happens where I'm just like, I don't care anymore, John.
It was a combiner something. There was a lot of combiners and a lot of big people and Titans and it just got a little crazy. I got a little lost as well. So.
We'll cover this again next week, but Till All Are One, Volume 1 is 1 to 4, Volume 2 is 5 to 8, and then Volume 3 is 9 to 12 with the 2017 annual.
So good!
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about Combiner Hunters in this one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
because
that's the next thing we should talk about. Yep.
I have very little to say about it except for one tiny thing.
What's that?
It's very pretty. But I don't care at all about the story except for one tiny little exchange, which is pretty good and even awesomer now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where RC, you know, all the crap goes down that I really legit don't care about. But RC's talking to Windblade and being all, you know, combiners are bad and an abomination and blah, blah, blah. And Windblade says, you sound like Galvatron. And RC says... you know, yeah, whatever, but I just don't like it when people are changed against their will. And I'm like, ooh, 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 ooh. Mm-hmm. That was good. Because A, mm-hmm. RC used to be Galvatron's twin brother. B, mm-hmm. she did get changed. And, you know, it depends on who's writing her, whether that was against her will or not. Mm-hmm. Or, like, it was against her will and now she's okay with it or blah, 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 whatever. But that part was good. Everything else was just like, look, we made Victorian.
Another combiner. Yes.
Yeah, and even like Sarah's art is kind of not quite up to par yet, but Yamaishi's colors, I want her to color absolutely everything. Please let her color all the stuff.
Yeah,
there we go. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. That ending when they're actually having their moment together, because that's still one of my favorite spotlights, is the RC spotlight, because it's like,
so good.
Gosh, it's one of those ones I go back to when people say that Transformers are for kids. You know, I'm like, you go read Spotlight RC. You go tell me if that is for children. You know?
No, it's not.
And Yeah, and then just to know that even though it was, what, 6-7 years later, it's still having an impact on the stories. I love that. Love that. So.
Well, what I will say about Combiner Hunters, other than the fact that it had a job and it did it, like, we needed Victorian to be a combiner.
And we needed an excuse to paint everybody differently.
And it's the only purely girl issue. All the females are in this issue, and I liked that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are a few guys, like Ironhide makes a panel, and I think some dude that gets knocked out makes a panel who has no name. So, but it was literally about the ladies in this one. It also shows that RC still has her own motivations for things. And you're right. After all this time, like the stuff that happened in Spotlight RC, her past is still controlling a part of her. She's still motivated. And again, she's another wild card, like we've talked about with Rat Trap. She's a wild card as well. She has her own motivations for doing things. And part of that was to take the Enigma of Combination because she doesn't trust anybody. And so that was the other thing, is she has to kind of, again, she takes something on faith because she sees that Windblade is, again, doing this little pieces. She's conceding these little pieces of playing dirty. She's having to learn how to play dirty. And I like that we get that moment in this issue, even though it was like, hey, you know, it's all girls and, you know, combiners. There were other things going on. I mean, the conflict is just a vehicle for what's really going on with the characters, and that's why I really loved this issue. So, it's quite interesting.
So you really liked it?
I did. I liked it in the. I mean, I didn't care about the conflict. What I cared about is what's going on with the characters. What I cared about was the fact that, you know, RC is doing something that she feels very strongly about, and they're having their first meet of all the ladies in the same issue, that it just kind of like, you know, it made sense to me that something like this kind of had to happen because somebody was pulling the strings with the combiner or with the Enigma of Combination. And who wouldn't be like, hey, like Prowl has been in her head to a sense because she's the one that was, like, his assassin back in issues gone past. And so she doesn't trust what's going on Cybertron, but she's also not on Cybertron. So it's like she has to, you know, if somebody else is not going to get rid of this item that Starscream should not have access to, then she's going to do it. And I like the fact that she was going to be that person that's going to go in there and say, just, I'm going to steal it and it'll disappear and nobody will know what happened to it and it'll be done and dusted, and there'll be one less thing for me to have to worry about. And yet, you know, by the end of the issue, she's okay, fine. If you're gonna play dirty, I guess I can take a few things on faith. Woo! Mm-hmm.
Good job, Amy. So, well done.
And thank you. I should not be the one to bring out, you know, the fan fiction here, but essentially, Starscream and Windblade, Arsene Prowl, double date night. They both are married couples to each other.
Hang on. Oh my gosh.
It makes sense, and I have to say there are a lot of people that have shipped these characters because of that. But I also see there's a love-hate relationship there. There is a game going on, and it's all Starscream, and because he set it up the way that it is, Windblade is having to learn how to play it. But I think that also makes her a stronger character, because what happens in the next couple until All Are One, where we get what happens to her and where it's moving, I think she needed to be on that path so she could be a stronger character to lead further down the road. So I like the journey. I've enjoyed the journey. So yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, is there a shipping going on between those two characters? Back to the
what? The internet, Amy. Of course there's shipping.
They ship everyone.
Yeah.
They ship people with Star Wars and Star Trek all the time.
Sometimes they even ship real people.
Oh yes, love that. Oh my gosh, have you ever talked to Alex about that?
I have not. I heard my fair share of stuff about James and Nick, so just saying.
Oh my gosh.
And of course I go, absolutely not. They're both, they have lives apart from one another. They have wives and kids, so get over yourself.
Oh my Lanta. It's
like, I would love to read a tongue-in-cheek Nick/James fan fiction, like a fully tongue-in-cheek wild. There was like the one that somebody found for me a while ago that was like, I think it's James Roberts and John Barber Ride Bikes is like the title of it. And it is just very tongue-in-cheek, mocking absolutely everything, and it is joyous, and yeah. 100% would read, sign me up, hit subscribe.
Pass. Not for me. I'll read the characters, maybe. I won't read the real people. I'm sorry. I have to have standards. I draw a line in the sand on that.
Apparently.
It's crazy that Whirl has standards and Optimus Prime doesn't.
Wow.
That's because we aren't really those characters, silly.
Or I'm now just sitting in like hyperanalyzing this. Okay, moving on.
That's funny. Now, this series, even though it has the Combiner Wars kerfuffle and all that, this series was, between the two of them, between Corin's art and Marigrid's writing, it was a really, really fun series.
I agree.
Yeah. I agree, too. I think it's very...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh,
go
I just want to see more of Windblade. Like, when Windblade first came out, you know, when she was, like, the fan vote and everything, I'm like, I thought it was forced that, okay, we got a female, so they're Autobot, blah, 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 you know, I'm like,
you wouldn't have said that if it was Slipstream on the Decepticons.
Exactly, because I want the Decepticon love, come on, you know? Uh-huh. But I honestly am in love with this character. She is amazing to me. Like I said, her character is someone that I would strive to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and here's another thing to think about, too, is when this, you talk about how, you know, kind of the kerfuffle of having Combiner Wars and Windblade. At the time when we got this, we didn't have the go-ahead, or at least that had been announced, that Marigrid was going to be doing Till All Are One. And right. So we got the first Windblade volume. We didn't even know if we were going to get anything more Windblade. And then this happened, and it was kind of combined in with Combiner Wars. And I think because of what Marigrid was building with that, we got the, hey, do you want to do a third ongoing? And that's what was next announced after that. So we got the end of Windblade. We got the Till All Are One ongoing, which ran for 12 issues until that went away as well for reasons, which we will go into in the next podcast. But the whole point is that we didn't know if we were going to get anything else. I know it was kind of frustrating that it was kind of combined with Combiner Wars, but on Bunch. But at least we, at the time, it was like, oh, at least we're getting more Windblade, and we really liked what was going on, at least in the first volume, to see more of that. And I think I was really glad that we got it. And yeah, it is kind of frustrating that the trade is, it's just kind of a little weird, but yeah. I mean, it's probably one of the only ones out there that I think to date that I can remember, besides having Combiner Wars and then Titans Return and everything kind of boom 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 all at once, it's the only one that I think it's kind of confusing, that I'm like, okay, what happened during that time? So much was happening at the time, it was like hard to keep everything straight. But I mean, for the most part, I'm glad that we still got it. I'm glad that what this built, I'm glad that we got what we got. But, you know, it was kind of also set up for what happens with Till All Are One. I mean, you can already see the seeds, knowing what I'm expecting to get in the next couple volumes here with the Till All Are One. She laid a lot of ground within these four to five issues. And it set everything up. And I kind of like to think that because she was working with John and he was saying, oh, you're really building this. You're really into this. You've got a lot of energy. Because she does. Marigrid has a lot of energy. She's very, I would say, she's very motivated and she has a lot of ambition. And you can't tell me that she wasn't saying, John, so when am I going to get the next one? When am I going to get the next one? Come on. I want to get that next one. Come on. I'd love to have an ongoing. Is there an ongoing for me? Yeah, I can totally tell that she probably did that. And because of her energy, sometimes that does have a good effect on, if you've got a lot of energy, a lot of ideas and ready to go right. And people see that you have the ability to do it and do it well. Why would they not give it to you? So, and it's been fun with Margaret's been great. I hope she comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope so too.
Isn't she doing like an actual Marvel Girls cartoon now?
Marvel's Rising. Marvel Rising.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then she's really busy. Because
it's got Squirrel Girl in it.
I know. I just picked it up this week. Excited.
Well, she's been really busy then, because of April 16th of this year. So DC Comics July 2018 solicits just came out. I can now say that I am currently working on the next arc of Batgirl, starting with a short story in issue 25.
She's a very busy woman.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna grow up and be her. But yeah, I loved what you were saying about Windblade's character, Nicole, and to riff off of that really fast before you run to work. I was thinking a lot because the cover for the trade of Distant Stars is this really interesting and unique image of Windblade with like every last bit of Japanese influence on display. And it's done by a Japanese artist, as far as I can tell, by my totally white girl knowledge of names, which is nil.
This is getting expensive!
Okay, so going off of what Nicole was saying about our feelings about the fan-made design of Windblade and how at first it felt really kind of hacky. And, of course she's a red and black seeker that is teamed up with Starscream and has a sword. Ta-da! But anyway, the cover for Distant Stars is by a Japanese artist, and it's very, very, it's got all these Japanese kind of, I guess, iconography in it. And I was thinking about how Windblade's sort of visual influences have been used to deepen her character, because as far as I can understand, she has elements of samurai and elements of geisha in her character. Mm-hmm. My personal knowledge of samurais is very small and based on like board games, and my knowledge of geishas is from reading memoirs of a geisha, so take what I say with a grain of salt. But Windblade's character is so much about honorable service to the greater, to the lord of the land, and trying to do that with integrity, which is kind of a samurai thing. And also she is very much a facilitator. She, especially in this series, this trade, she's very much the person who's bringing people together. And what's like, I hate the word networking, but you know what I mean? Like bringing people together, and that's a geisha thing. And
you get a Facebook, and you get a Facebook, and you get a Facebook.
Gosh. But you know what I mean? Like trying to help people get along and work together.
Right, yeah. And she's the calm voice in amongst all the infighting, yeah.
And I love how these elements that could have been very cheesy have been used to deepen her character. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. That's good, though. Absolutely. I mean, this, again, it goes back to Margaret as the writer. She is in the headspace of Windblade. She had literally a unused, uncreated character was created, and she made this character who she is. I think she made the strongest version that we're probably going to get of her.
Oh, yeah.
Her character identity that we read on the page is very specific, and that's why I can't read anything else other than what they've got in IDW right now, because that's who she is. That's her identity to me because of that. And this, I don't want anything else. That's what I want, because that's what I love. So yeah. Kudos to Margaret. You go, girl.
Margaret.
I think she's won us all over.
Yeah, pretty much.
I knew that when she wrote the Dinobot version. What was it? The Rage of the Dinobots?
Rage of the Dinobots.
Yeah, that was awesome. Oh my gosh.
She did so good with those guys, and she just pulls it in from there as if it was like, that's easy. I can do that. Uh-huh. Yeah, just watch me flex my muscles. Ooh, ooh.
There you go. Yeah. All right. So let's wrap this up. Amy, what would you rate Distant Star 0 to 5?
5 being the highest and 0 being the lowest? Okay.
Yes.
I'd give it a solid 4.5. It's not perfect, but I like a lot of stuff that's in it. A lot of it makes me happy. A lot of it makes me smile. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nicole?
I'm going to mimic Amy, I'd say a 4. I mean, actually, I'm going to give it 4.5 because it has Knockout on it. So,
she'd probably give it a 5 if it had her boyfriend in it.
No, I really liked. I just think the thing that throws me off is throwing the Combiner Hunter series in there. It just seems like it's out of place, but it does have its moments. Overall, I really do appreciate, Margaret does just an amazing job with her storytelling. I really had a fun time with it. I had a fun time visiting all the different planets. It's kind of like the Unicron series done well. You know? You know? And to see, relive characters in a different view that we're familiar with, and to be introduced to new characters, and like I said, her writing Windblade is just so amazing. I love it. So.
Heather, what about you?
I'm going to give it a very workmanlike 3.5. It's doing hard work, and it's there, and it's present, and it's gotten the job done. It's not carried up into the higher echelons of things I would give to people and press upon them and be like, read this now.
Yeah.
But it's a really solid foundation.
Yeah.
And I think I think you could do that once it gets put into the phase 2, actual storyline hardcover collection, you could do that.
Yeah.
This now and everything that we went through at the beginning of this podcast of trying to figure out where all, because by the time we got to the end of Combiner Hunters, I'm like, wait, that's it? You just leave us there? Or was it issue 7 that basically just leaves it and doesn't say anything? Like, it essentially ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm like, really? Seriously? That's it? And then have to go, because if you go from issue 7, you have to go from issue 7 to issue 42 of Not Rid, because that's the epilogue.
Yeah.
And it's like, God, no, we need this in story form right now.
I'd say no. The next one that happens is, at least if you read the last issue 7, the next one would be Till All Are One. This doesn't follow. Okay. This doesn't follow to what John's doing. That would be right in the middle of, I'd say that was Combiner Wars. But the thing is, you have to read Combiner Wars to get to Distant Stars, because what happens in Combiner Wars is very important. If I wanted to give a standalone Windblade issue or standalone Windblade story, I would be giving somebody Windblade Volume 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Most definitely.
That's probably the biggest criticism that I can say against this right now is how it was traded was kind of eh. But again, if you look at the timing and you look at what we were getting, we were lucky just to be getting more Windblade at the time. And we didn't know we were going to get Till All Are One. So I don't think that should play a role in how I vote on.
Oh, like, it's not. You know, that wasn't my point. It's not going to affect I wouldn't let that affect a rating of it, but I'm just saying, in order to recommend it to somebody, you're going to have to wait until it's collected in the phase 2 full-on story order thing.
Guys,
or something. I gotta throw out a dissenting opinion on this.
I would be
absolutely fine handing someone Windblade Volume 1 and Windblade Volume 2 and not even bothering with the intervening story. I think the trades on their own are okay. I mean, I can pick up Windblade Volume 2, Distant Stars, and start at the beginning and just kind of infer everything else. And I don't feel lost. However, the Last City version, I'm sure I would feel lost if it's got those. Yeah, that'd feel lost. Yep. But so if we don't get too hung up on one trade that was poorly put together out of all the trades that IDW have done, which say really they do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You know, just make sure everybody knows, don't bother with this version, get this other version, and then you'll be fine. Yeah. So anyways, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to throw this out there.
Yeah. No, that's completely fair, though, because, I mean, the last city seems to be, like, the only misstep that I think I've ever seen them trade. Yeah. So other than that, you know, but yeah.
All right, for me, I'm probably going to give it a, between all of your all's ratings, I'm going to give it between a 3.5 and a 4. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. I felt that you could follow along. They opened each issue with, you know, following along fine. You didn't really have to read the first three, like, at all. I read this in single issue. Like, it was at least a year before I bought whenever the Distant Stars trade came out, it was a year after that I probably bought it. I had originally had it as all 7 single issues, and I read it fine. So yeah, 3.5 or 4 for me. I'm trying to think. Coming up next, we've got, oh boy, More of Us, folks. Lovely. We've got Till All Are One is next week, so that's what's happening inside the pull bag then. Amy, where can the people find you online?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at Lady of Rack.
Nicole, what about you?
Just Google Beatles, Steven. That's Beatles like the band, not the bug.
Mm-hmm. Heather, what about you?
Google Hahi Prime, and it's always me.
I am at TFG1Mike on Twitter. You can follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Also follow at The Pullbag for all those updates on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next time here inside The Pullbag. Till all are gone.
Or in your stomach. Dirty. That's not dirty.
That was the point. I had my finger on my Adam's apple, so.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook. Facebook.com/ThePullBag. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @ThePullBag and @GeekcastRadio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.